All right. Hello and welcome to Stoney's Witchy Place on Blog Talk Radio. That amazing opening audio is called Aradia's Chant, performed by Ross Marinas. If you like what you hear, go look it up. Aradia's Chant by Ross Marinas. The full chant is incredible and chilling. Wonderful, wonderful woman that I am honored to call sister. Go check her out. And now, let's walk into Stoney's Witchy Place and get this episode started. Hey there. Hope everybody can hear me okay. Don't see anybody in the chat yet. No call-ins. The call-in number, if you want it. Let's see. Can I put this in here? Yeah, let's do that. All right. There's the call-in number if you want to call in. Area code 657-383-0216. Now, today's show, first of all, I hope it goes better than the last one. We had some audio issues and not a lot of turnout. See if we can switch that up. We are talking today about celebrating Lammas, also Lunasa. And we'll get a little bit into what the difference between the two is and what the general idea is behind the celebration of either or both. Then we'll take a little break and we'll get into dealing with information overload. In this day and age of technology, holy cow, the information overload out there is insane. So we'll discuss that a little bit. But first, let's talk about... Let's talk about this holiday. It's a position on the wheel of the year. If you don't know, the wheel of the year is a kind of a celebratory calendar of significant days particular to celebrations of, pagans, mostly Western witches, specifically Wicca. This particular celebration is officially, as it's described, not really that old, maybe a few hundred years. Prior to that, was celebrated simply as the first harvest of the year. It was a celebration of success of the growing season, and the celebration was built around appreciating the fact that we got a good harvest. And in this modern day and age, unless you are a farmer of any scale, you don't know, you may not understand at least, how significant a harvest is to a person that has put the time into maintaining that crop and dealing with the weather and the bugs and everything else to ensure that they got a harvest. It wasn't always within the control of the farmer, but you can't go out and, you know, pitchforks and torches and chase your farmer down because the crops didn't come in well, because who was going to grow them the next year? So the gods, whoever they may be in various places, either got the credit or the blame. First harvest was a celebration. This is credit was given. It involved bonfires and dancing and meeting with your community that the harvest provided for, celebrating the people that had put in the work to not only get a crop to harvest, but actually harvest it. One of the biggest traditional practices was Lammas loaves. made from the first wheat harvest of the year. Now, the significance, you really have to put yourself into the historical position of people 500, 600, 700 years ago, even more recently than that, let's say pre-supermarket. You have to put yourself in the position of these people. When first harvest came about and the crop was successful, hallelujah, you know, praise Lou, whatever you want to look, however you want to look at it, you've got food that you can set to go into the short days of the year that are coming up and the cold weather. Hopefully it was a bountiful harvest so that you can actually have enough to get you through until new crops come in next year. But you take the first harvest of your wheat, which is a mainstay back in the day, and you bake this bread, these loaves that were used in this celebration. Now, people say, well, you've got Lammas and you've got Lunasa, and they're both harvest festivals. What's the difference? Well, based on a variety of sources that I've looked into and people I've talked to, here's my understanding of the basic difference between the two. Lammas was a kind of, I hate to use the term, but Christianized version of the harvest festival. And the loaves, they were called holy loaves. And this led to our modern celebrations of breaking bread for church communion. But it was a way for the people who were still very agriculturally affected in that historical time to be brought into the folds of an established religious authority, trying not to choke, and still celebrate the bounty of the harvest. So it was rather, it was a political move on the one hand, but it was a rather straightforward move for them to adopt it because people were not going to stop being happy about having something to harvest. The older version of this would be Lunasa, which is also essentially a harvest celebration, but the deity that was celebrated was the god Lu, the god of crafts, and the celebration was more geared towards an appreciation of Lu, of his sacrifice, of his making things happen in order to ensure a successful harvest. Based on multiple resources, this is my understanding of the two names of this celebration. And of course, on the Wheel of the Year, we're celebrating either Lammas or Lunasa in the Northern Hemisphere. So I'll get to you guys in the Southern Hemisphere when we roll around to whatever holiday it is you're doing right now up here. Okay, cool. Anyway, basic idea is take your first harvest, prepare something special out of it, have this celebration as a thanksgiving to whatever gods or forces or your own two hands that provided, that you believe provided this harvest for you to enjoy and get you through the short days and cold weather that are forthcoming. Now, it's called first harvest in a lot of places because you would plant your field at the appropriate time and you would work that field while your, say, cattle was grazing in another field. Well, then when this field started producing its fruit or the beginnings of its vegetation, and when the shoots were coming out of the ground and you knew it was going to work, you would move your cattle to yet another field, work that field and prepare it and plant it. Well, obviously those two fields aren't going to come to fruition for harvest at the same time. Generally, around the first or so of August in the northern hemisphere, in wheat growing country and other grain growing areas, around the first week of August is when your first efforts would produce food. And this would continue until the days got too short and too cold for this food production to continue. So there you have first harvest. So whether or not you call it first harvest, Lammas, or Lunasa, be thankful for what it is that you've managed to get a hold of through your efforts. And to me, on a spiritual level, that's kind of what I look at on this day. What sacrifice has been put forth in order for me to get to where I'm at this point in my life and enjoy the bounty of the harvest. For a lot of inner city people, their concept of this might be brought out strictly through exposure to television and movies that depict the old farming way of life, because they're not really agri-centric in their modern city environment. One of the cool things that I thought was neat, I had a conversation today that fell right into the celebration of first harvest. How many people that live in the inner cities, they have been in major cities their entire life, can explain to you exactly the process of seed to plate for whatever food they buy at the local supermarket. Most of them can't even tell you where it came from geographically, but that's going to get me into a whole different rant that has nothing to do with pig and horse. It's just a fact of modern life, I guess. So I hope that your first harvest, your Lammas, your Lunasa, was a celebration of a good harvest for you, whether physically or spiritually. And we'll be right back with topic number two, which is dealing with information overload. The number again to call in if you have questions or you want to listen on your phone is in the chat, area code 657-383-0216. Boo-boo 714, thanks for joining. If you have questions, throw them in the chat, and we will be right back. Okay, had to take a little break, refill a coffee cup. Actually, it's water this late in the day, and you're going to have to bear with me. My notes are not the greatest right now. I couldn't find my glasses when I was writing my notes, so it's a combination of chicken scratch and hieroglyphics or some such thing. I want to talk to you about information overload. Well, information overload in this day and age is pretty much about as common as having skin. Really, we've got the internet, the publishing industry is overwhelming us with book after book after book. There are magazines on a wide variety of topics, whether it is paganism in general, whether they're trying to encompass a large chunk of it, whether it's very specific to a particular path. holy smokes, it's easy to get overwhelmed. It's easy to become overloaded and just, you know, say screw it, push all the books off your desk and say, I'm not doing this anymore. My brain hurts. Well, the problem that we run into is people have not been taught good methods of research. And we as elders in the pagan community that are passing along, whether it's tradition or new information, mouth to ear, we need to make sure that the people that we're talking to are aware of not only this endless multitude of resources, but how to zero in on resources that have the most value for what it is we're passing along. Again, a conversation I had earlier today, when you're doing research to discover a historical foundation for something, you need to research various sources, including sources that represent opposing views. The reason you do this is because you want to find the common points, the common issues, the common thread throughout a variety of resources. And those are more likely to be your facts of the matter, whereas everything that's added to it is likely, more likely, if it's only in one source and not the other six, more likely to be the author's personal opinion or pure hyperbole. So, how do we narrow it down? Narrow it down in a variety of ways when it comes to paganism. We can look at paganism in and of itself throughout history. Well, in my mind, from the research I have done and what I have learned over 40 years, is it goes back to two things: the practice of witch and shamanic tradition. Sympathetic magic was probably the very first magic that ever was produced. The gods and goddesses, and I'm doing quotes with my fingers here, were most likely personalities attributed to natural items like clouds and the wind and whatnot. But how does that help me teach? How does that help me understand paganism now, when it's so diverse? Okay, well, what it boils down to is, now, if you go back far enough and you get grasp this foundation, now you can find a common root in the variety of paths that fall under the pagan umbrella. Fast forward and consider, as this philosophy spread around, consider the specific geographic location of where a particular path was first recognized, as we look back in history, as the archaeologists go dig it up. In the United States, there is a huge, huge following under the pagan umbrella of Celtic paganism. Why is this? Well, because a great majority of the people who formally presented these pathways in modern America trace their roots to the British Isles and the European mainland, where the Celts were a huge influence. Voodoo, the Yoruba traditions that came out of Nigeria area in Africa into the Caribbean islands and up through the United States, you know, New Orleans is famous for their voodoo and Yoruba traditions. You have an understanding based on where a particular path is thought to be first established geographically as to why that path is what it is, what they believe, how it was practiced. Right now we're doing first harvest, Lammas or Lunasa in the Northern Hemisphere. Well, that celebration was a little bit different in, say, the inland areas of Scandinavia above the snow zone versus what it was in Greece. Why? Well, obviously the harvest times are different. The harvests themselves are different. The thing that we are harvesting is going to be different. You know, wheat doesn't grow so great up in the country where you have 2.5 months of workable soil and that's it. And it may not do so great in a place that has rocky soil and is dry 10 months out of the year. So this geographical perspective will give you some understanding of why a belief system from a specific point of view operates the way it does. They're restricted by geographical confines and whatever that environment allowed them or disallowed them to do. So what we're doing here is we're establishing historical background that we can tell is fact to understand a particular path. Now, this is kind of where we get into also the discussion of eclectic. 1,000 years ago, you didn't have eclectic, a group, because people were generally confined either by circumstance or responsibilities to their community or geography. They were confined to that specific area. They weren't exposed to practices of a different area. Whereas today, we have information on practices from all over the world. So we can pick and choose. We have that convenience. They did not back then. So you can respect the eclectic for vicariously traveling around the world and gathering this variety of pagan methodology, or you can understand that being eclectic does not necessarily mean culturally specific and traditional. This will help you further refine deleting some of that overload. So now we have a base where modern spirituality / religion / metaphysical practices started, or what it was when it first began. We can consider geographical constraints on specific paths, and then we can consider the wide variety of historical and cultural importance in a particular practice when we adopt it to ourselves. This helps us further refine the research that we're going to do in order to determine our interests and find what works for us. And as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to spirituality, that's the key to the whole thing. Does it work for you and not cost someone else? Then it's right for you. Excuse me. I'm not doing 100% today, so I'm kind of off on a cloud here. Bear with me. The other thing that we need to consider now that we have all of that and we have some idea of what direction to go to determine the validity of a path and its relevance to what we're searching for. Now we get full blown into the modern superstorm of mass media, whether it is the internet, whether it is the books that have been published since, let's say the early to mid 90s is when it really kind of took off, and now it's just overwhelming, or whether it's access to other people that we can learn from thanks to telecommunications. How do we sort through all of that? Well, we take the information that we've already come up with to narrow our search and focus it in a particular direction based on what we have found to be valid for us. Now you go out and you find a set of books, for instance, that cover that particular area of study. Okay. Let's say, for instance, using the tarot. I know way too many people that read tarot that know absolutely zilch about where it all came from and how it became a method of divination and what it was really meant and what happened that caused it to be such a widespread tool in modern practice. Establish all that for yourself first, and then you say, okay, I want to learn how to use the tarot. You find tarot books. Well, holy crap, Stone, there's 8,000 books on tarot, how to read it, what it is. What, are you kidding me? This is where we get into our personal interactions. Talk to a variety of people that read tarot cards or practice whatever it is, whatever topical information you're seeking. That talk to several different people, ask them not only what learning resource would they recommend, but what practice in utilizing this tool or spell work or correspondence or astrological belief system, what practice do they believe you should begin with? The key here is to ask several people. Again, just like researching historical information, multiple resources will help you focus on what seems to be the one or two things from every source that are common throughout. That's where you put your focus. Sticking with the tarot, everybody seems to know that you buy a tarot deck, you open up the box, you pull the cards out, and there's a little book there, a little booklet, pamphlet, whatever you want to call it. And it tells you the meaning of each and every card in the deck. Well, okay, it's a good place to start. It gives you a foundation to build on. But if Miss Fancy Pants tells me that this card means this, is that an absolute? Is that what that card means? Or is it what that person intended for the card to mean, what that person felt that card means when they first came up with it? The rest of it is going to rely on your personal intuition. Now, I'm not going to get into a whole full-blown discussion on learning tarot. Hopefully in the future, my buddy Dusty White, who wrote a couple of the greatest tarot books I've ever seen, hopefully he'll be on the show and we can talk about tarot and learning tarot at that point. But in the meantime, my point is you need to sift through a specific set of information from various sources, including those you may not agree with, to find the common truths, and then use those common truths and refine and refocus your research effort that much more. A great majority of the information that is out there now in books, on, you know, the television, in the movies, over the internet, is rehash. It's not somebody's personal experience and validation of the information. It's a regurgitation of what they read somewhere else. Well, where they read it, their resource may very well have been a regurgitation of where that person learned it from. Again, this is why you slowly narrow down your funnel of serious information by getting multiple sources and trying to collaborate the common information in those multiple sources. When you go online, you know what? Let's do one right now. I'm going to go on Google and I'm going to search for spell crafting. 83,000 results. Looks like a great majority of the first ones to come up are gaming references. If you're not a gamer, you can discount all of those. Let's keep going down. Let's see. Okay, we're going to go to page 2 of 83,000 results. On page 2, we finally find a reference to magic and spellcrafting. Let's go to that. I'm not going to tell you what it is. You can do this research on your own, and hopefully it'll pan out for you. The information that's on this particular website, if I see a very distinct fact or statement as fact, I highlight that. And I'm going to do this one. I'm going to highlight. I'm going to copy and do a Google search of that highlighted area. And you will be able to find if there are multiple references to that exact phrase. If there are multiple references to an exact phrase through your Google search, through your book studies, guess what? They all got that bit of information from a single source. Okay, so find that single source. That single source is going to give you the specific information that everybody else is regurgitating. Does that make sense? We have Boo Boo and Supernatural Radio with us today. If that does not make sense, let me know. But what I'm telling you, in order to avoid information overload in your study of paganism, spirituality, methodologies of magic working, build yourself a funnel to refine. You're pouring all of this garbage into the top of the funnel. What you want to come out the bottom is your fully refined, research-based, and supported piece of data that you can put into your practice and make it work for you. Well, now what do we do with all the crap that's left over? Well, first of all, just like this search that we just did, we hit Google for spellcrafting. We got 83,000 results. Page 2, before we ever got to one that was relative to methods of magic and paganism. So we go to that. We find a phrase that is very succinct, maybe stated as fact. We search for that phrase. Guess what? Find that phrase in multiple websites throughout the internet. So is the first website going to be where we do all our research? I would say no. I would say if you can recognize this information as common throughout all of these dozens and dozens of other sites, you need to drill down further and find the source for that phrase that was basically copy-pasted from somewhere. Once you find that source, then you can compare that sources and other sources of information that aren't regurgitating each other and pick out the common gems amongst them, and so on and so forth. Well, but what about that website, the first one that we found that had this phrase that we searched for? What do we do with the rest of it? Well, you have two choices. You can completely discount it because they've copy and pasted information from somewhere else that you can go and find yourself, or you can set it aside for later use with the other 83,000 websites. And once you have drilled down to the true source of a piece of information and garnered what you can from that source, now come back and look at what was set aside in order to further support or understand that bit of original information. Basically, what you're doing is you're taking a, say, a fact is going to be exactly what it is, no matter who says it, where you read it, where you heard it, where you saw it. A fact is going to be a fact. Excuse me. You're going to initially focus on finding the bare fact. Now, what is the impact of that bare fact on my system, my practice, my methodology? That's where we come back to the other sources that shared this common fact and look at how they adapted this fact to work for them. We did this exercise using spellcrafting. Well, in spellcrafting itself, producers of mass media in this modern age are, excuse the term, guilty as hell when it comes to the copy-paste mentality. Just about every website that's out there that is built around a pagan ideal and includes magic is going to have a list of spells or an online book of shadows. Is this the creator of that website? Is this their personal book of shadows containing what they have some valid experience with? Or is it a cool spell that they got from, last year's magical almanac, but they've never worked it? You have to be very careful, and you have to be able to discern personal experience that has led to an opinion about right and wrong, good, bad, what works, what doesn't work. You have to be able to discern that from fact. Okay. What's another example? Okay. Within the pagan community, we generally accept that Satanists are pagans. Well, is that fact? No, if you look at the generally accepted definitions of paganism, Satanists don't really fall into that category. But in modern thought processes, they generally do fall into that category because it's other than Abrahamic faith. The other problem you run into is, well, but they can't really be pagan because, you know, Satan and all that. Well, you know what? Satan is a Christian concept. it's not a pagan concept. So are they pagan? Are they Christian? Are they something else altogether? There again, we're going to get into opinions and differences of opinions instead of drilling down into what is fact. Most Satanists I know, first of all, they're hardcore humanists. But more importantly, none of them worship anybody called Satan. So to me, that is fact based on my personal observation and experience, instead of regurgitating what somebody else said. But in the big picture of things, and by definition, is it fact? No, it's not. This is what you have to try and drill down to. So what it boils down to, in order to deal with information overload in this day and age and still learn a path or a magical practice effectively, you have to pre-establish a method of research that doesn't just sift everything through your kitchen sieve and what falls out is valid, but funnels it down and pushes it down to the point where you have single source information. Once you can find single source information, then you can work your way back up through everything else in order to garner understanding of that particular thing. And once again, I'm going to take a short 2-minute break because my water cup is empty and I've got a dry throat. If anybody that's on here today has a question, throw it into chat. Anybody that listens later, if you have a question about any of this, feel free to post it as a comment or add it on Stoney's Witchy Place on Facebook or message it to us on Twitter. And for those of you that are interested, the call-in number is 657-383-0216 if you want to put your pretty little singing voice live on the air. And I'll be right back. All right, we are back. We are live. And boy, I sure hope this works. Again, we're talking about how to deal with information overload in this modern age of, wow, there's just way too much information out there. Anybody that knows me or has at least listened to the last couple episodes knows that I'm big on the responsibility of being an elder in whatever pagan community you're involved in. One of those responsibilities is helping people find valid information. When I'm teaching you, I'm going to give you my personal viewpoint and opinion on things. But I'm also going to give you resources to drill down through to understand why my opinion or experience is what it is. As an elder, that's a responsibility. Otherwise, you have no business passing things along. If you came up with something by the seat of your pants, you know, supernatural, goddess-given vision, and said, this is wonderful, this is great, I'm going to start a new coven based on this, you still got to have some foundation to build on. That's what you need to pass along to the people that you're teaching. The resources to understand that foundation and how it developed into what it is now. That's how you're going to keep your people from drowning when they walk into a pagan library with the thousands of books that are out there. It's also going to help, once you teach these people how to do this research, it's going to help them sift through all of the made-up crap that is out there and all of the regurgitation that is out there. And if you're an author, I'm going to tell you right now, you are not fulfilling your responsibility, the presenter of learning information to these pagans, young or old, if all you are doing is slapping information from some other place into your word processor and using your thesaurus to change some of the words and then putting your name on it. Not only are you doing discredit to yourself and the community of wonderful authors that are out there, but you're stealing. Don't do it. So, we start with our historical reference. Where did this all come from? We start with our geographical reference to understand what were the constraints of this, where the specific path is identified as coming from. We understand how things like migration and interaction through trade developed that also included the sharing of ideas. We focus on a general topic. We find resources, websites, or books that cover that general topic. We find the common threads throughout those sources to identify as most likely the truth. And then we drill down past the variety of sources to find the single source, the beginning of that particular truth or fact. That's when you determine whether or not it's going to work for you. Does it make sense? Does it feel right? Does it produce? Then we work our way back up through the funnel of crappage and get viewpoints and opinions from a variety of sources, not just those that we agree with, in order to gain an understanding of how this unique fact will apply to us should we choose to pursue it. This is Stoney on Stoney's Witchy Place. We've got 10 minutes left. Anybody has any questions, throw them into the chat box. If you want to call in, the number is 657-383-0216. And, wow, again, just like the last show, half an hour is not long enough. 1 hour seems to leave me hanging on the precipice, hoping I don't fall over, thinking of things to say to fill air. So help me out here, people. If you've got something you want to share, throw it out there, please. Running a One Witch studio is not something I'm used to with live shows. This is the third podcast I've done over the last 8 years or so. First time working with live. Be nice to have an engineer to do all the things that I would normally do on a recorded episode. Now, in case you don't know our schedule, our live shows will generally follow the new moon and full moon cycles. And in between, we'll have pre-recorded episodes on a variety of topics. I'm working on getting some nods from a variety of guest speakers to be on the show at some future point, covering various subjects that they are particularly known for, as well as digging up topics that are of concern to the pagan community at large for recorded shows. If you have any of those ideas, throw them out there, put them in the comment section. I'll do my best to try and do my own research on those things and get them going for you. So, don't know what else to tell you. We still have to do an episode on the humorous efforts to define paganism, if it can be done. And, of course, guest speakers. I'm hoping to get Dusty on here to discuss tarot with you guys at some future point. If we get really, really, really lucky, we may get Byron Ballard on here to discuss Appalachia hoodoo. Do you know when the next full moon is? You know what? I've got my calendar sitting right here. Should be approximately 2 weeks. The calendar or the moon cycle is about 28 days. As far as I'm concerned, we should go back to the 28-day calendar and live by the cycle of the moon. All right. It looks to be the 18th of August. Let me verify that with another calendar. See, this is how you do that research. The 18th of this month is the next full moon. That will be the next live show. And maybe we'll discuss the value of working by the moon, what the various aspects of the moon mean and how they can help us create what it is we're working for on the new moon, the full moon, waxing moon, waning moon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Thanks for that question, and you're very welcome. Anything else? Otherwise, we're going to get down to about the 4-minute mark, and I'm going to be choking on my own words and boring you to death. And we're going to call 4 minutes early. Let's see, real quick. I want to do a rundown for you of some other people's information. If you are in Hamilton, Montana, I really hope you aren't right now because of the fire going on down there. It's a mess. The whole valley here is filled with smoke. I don't even like to go outside. But if you're in the Hamilton, Montana area, you can go to Between the Worlds down there on Main Street. Fantastic spiritually oriented shop. They are on not only to do business, but they are there for folks who need to take a break from the fire and go someplace and have some relaxation. That's Between the Worlds in Hamilton, Montana. If you're Mid-Valley up in the Stevensville area, stop in the Mystic Owl. The Mystic Owl is right next to the Valley Drug Pharmacy, which is at the four-way stop. If you're heading south, you get to the four-way stop, take a right. She's halfway down the block there in the middle of that building before you get to the Liquor Store. If you're up in Missoula, swing into Water Lilies on South Reserve. Say hi to those folks. Do a little shopping, ask some questions, share a few moments. Anything else that anybody has that they want to offer up? All right. We're down to the 4-minute, 20-second mark, and I think we're going to call it good. We're going to get out with a little bit of Ross Marinas doing a Radius chant. Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you for the next live show, which will be the next full moon. And in between, I'll throw up one or two pre-records for you to tune in and hopefully enjoy. Give us feedback here. Stony's Witchy Place on Facebook, Stony's Witchy Place on Twitter. You're appreciated. We hope you're blessed. Talk to you soon. Stony's